Good day.
Today is 25th November 2025, and before I start this programme, a few things. First and most important, apologies for the poor sound quality of yesterday's programme. As I've discussed, I have been away from London in Edinburgh in Scotland. That means, by the way, that today's video is going to be especially short since I have a train to catch. But putting that aside, because today I return to London, but putting that aside, for some reason unknown to me, there were problems with the sound in the programme, in yesterday's programme. The best suggestion that I've heard is that there might have been a device in a neighbouring room that somehow interfered with the sound. Anyway, so far as I can tell, the sound of this video at the moment is okay, is acceptable. Well, I hope so anyway. And anyway, we'll see what happens. But my apologies, and I'll be back in London and later today, and the situation will presumably normalise. The second thing I wanted to say is please remember to tick the like button if, notwithstanding whatever problems with sound may arise, you've liked this video or whichever part of the video you want to watch and want to confirm that fact. Anyway, let's, without more ado, go straight in. And over the last couple of hours, both the Russians and the Americans have been talking and speaking. And let's start with the Russians. So Putin's spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, has been making a number of statements about the situation. He says that Russia remains fully open to the negotiation process. We are interested in achieving our goals precisely through political and diplomatic means. We consistently adhere to this position. And TASS goes on to say that the spokesman emphasized that Russia's position has not changed and has been repeatedly confirmed by President Putin. Now, that could be, in a sense, that could sound positive from an American point of view. But note the point about the Russians achieving their goals, which are obviously the goals that Putin set out in his speech to the foreign ministry on the 14th of June, 2024. And also about the fact that Russia's position has been set out by Putin and has not changed. Now, that, of course, could mean that the Russians have always said that they're prepared to negotiate, but it could also mean that they have not also changed their goals because those were set out by President Putin. So anyway, that's Ushakov. And that's Peskov. And then Peskov was asked some questions. He was asked whether he was aware about the amended version of the US plan on Ukraine, which, according to a media report, had been reduced from 28 points to 19. This is the document that came out of the discussions between the Americans, the Ukrainians and the Europeans, which took place in Geneva and which I discussed in my program yesterday. Well, this morning, Peskov had this to say about that. He said no. He said that Russia had not received any version of the updated plan, not officially and not unofficially. We have no idea what is there. He then went on to say that the Kremlin understands that Washington and Kiev are now engaged in talks and that the initial text is being amended. We understand that the text published earlier is being amended. The text that we unofficially obtained earlier has undergone changes by now. At some point, when the time is right, we will engage in contacts with the Americans and officially receive the information. Anyway, that was said by Peskov this morning. And notice a number of points that he's making here. He's making the point that the Russians have not formally been provided by the United States with the 28-point plan, the original 28-point plan. He says that he is aware of this plan, and of course Putin at the Security Council meeting also said that the Russians were aware of this plan. But note again that Peskov says that the Americans have not officially provided the Russians with a copy. So that begs the question of how the Russians obtained it unofficially. Well, one possibility, and it's not one to be discounted, is that the Russians did exactly the same thing as everyone else has done, which is that they took the unofficial version to be the one that the Ukrainian MP Alexei Goncharenko published a few days ago, and which I have been discussing in various programs. And as I've already pointed out, this is only one version of a document which is floating around. It is being changed all the time and by all sorts of people, and I doubt whether any fully agreed text has at any point been agreed, fully agreed even within the US administration, let alone between the Americans and the Russians and between the Americans and the Ukrainians and the Europeans. And Peskov, somewhat dismissively, also had a number of further things to say. He said that the whole situation with respect to the plan is a complete and total mess. It's impossible to comment on every new report in the media now. I would describe the situation as nothing short of media mayhem. Indeed, there have been a lot of conflicting reports and statements. And Peskov then went on to say that it's precisely because there is this chaos that Moscow is not engaging in megaphone diplomacy, but is waiting for the United States to reach out, preferably in an official manner. Notice the comment, preferably in an official manner. Could that mean that the Russians are treating the contacts with Dmitriev as unofficial? Well, one very insightful commentator, Larry Johnson, thinks so. He's pointed out that Dmitriev is not a diplomat. He is not, properly speaking, even an official of the Russian government. He is the head of Russia's direct investment front, and he is an advisor to Putin. It seems that Witkoff reached out to him at various points whilst he was working on the plan, but the Russians do not consider this a negotiation and are clearly denying that they had any input over the plan at all, at least officially at all. Now, on this point, we can see that the opponents of negotiations with the Russians are not only mobilizing in Europe, but they are mobilizing in Washington as well. So over the course of the last few hours, we've had a statement issued by a group of senators after a meeting with the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio. And the senators said that the plan that had been drawn up, the 28-point plan, was originally drafted by the Russians, and that it was a Russian plan, and that they'd received this information from none other than Marco Rubio himself. Well, Rubio immediately afterwards, shortly afterwards, denied this claim entirely. He insisted that the 28-point plan is American, that the Americans drafted the plan, and that there was some contact with Dmitriev, but that this is essentially an American creation. Now, here I would say straight away that I do agree with Rubio for a number of reasons. Firstly, the document itself, which, as I have said already, does not fully reflect Russian positions. Some of the earlier media reports that had appeared in Axios and the Financial Times did reflect Russian positions, but the 28-point plan that Goncharenko published does not. Anyway, that's the first thing to say. The second, and this is an important point, is that it needs to be understood that ever since President Trump was inaugurated in January, all diplomatic contacts and all initiatives to end the war have been made by Washington to Moscow and not the other way round. So it was the Americans who first proposed the ceasefire and the Kellogg plan, which the Russians rejected. It was the Americans who suggested a ceasefire in the Black Sea and a resumption of the grain deal. That plan, by the way, it was the Europeans and the Ukrainians who rejected it. It was the Americans also who contacted the Russians, Witkoff to be precise, and went to Moscow, and he went to Moscow many times. And it was Witkoff who repeatedly travelled to Moscow, where he had many, many meetings with President Putin. And it was Witkoff who, at the beginning of August, came with a proposal which we have never seen, but which apparently does now exist in some kind of document form, or at least the Russians are now suggesting that it does. Anyway, it was Witkoff who came with a proposal from President Trump, which the Russians say that they considered amongst themselves, and which Putin, after seeking confirmation from Witkoff and Trump in Alaska, felt had obtained, and having obtained their confirmation that this is a real American proposal and plan, that plan also the Russians then said that they'd accept it. And then there was the telephone call that took place between Putin and Trump a few weeks ago, and Lavrov has now told us that it was indeed Trump who initiated that call. Many had assumed that it was Putin, but it was in fact Trump. And of course, it is Trump who proposed the Budapest summit. And it is Witkoff, Trump's representative, who has put together this particular plan. So it is the Americans who have been making the running in negotiations over the last year. The Russians have been receptive, but so far non-committal. The Ukrainians and the Europeans have been straightforwardly hostile. Anyway, that's one reason. That's another reason why I prefer Rubio's account. I'm sure that this is an American plan. Everything about it suggests that it must be, and I don't believe this story that the senators are circulating, that this is a Russian plan and that the Americans simply adopted it. The fact that the senators are talking in this way shows that they are trying to wreck the plan. And in fact, there have been all kinds of negative and hostile comments about this plan in the US media, in Congress. Senator McConnell has, of course, spoken out against it. Senator Warner, amongst the Democrats, has spoken out against it. Many American senators, as I understand, and Congress people, are continuing to comment with hostility about this plan. There's been a good discussion of all of this by Larry Johnson on Sonar 21. He points out to some of the statements and comments that have been made by various people. McConnell said that the Trump administration was not pressure the victim and appease the aggressor as a way of bringing about peace. He questioned which difficult concessions the US had made. And allies and adversaries are watching. This is according to McConnell. Will America hold firm against aggression, or will it reward aggression? And Mark Warner said, Neville Chamberlain's giving in to Hitler before World War II looks strong in comparison, and that the plan resembles a set of Russian talking points. And similar comments have been said by Thomas Friedman, I understand, in the New York Times. And you can see that the pressure to water down the plan, to change the plan, is on. And of course, this is meeting up with the objections, the hostility from Europe. And I think that these problems in the end are going to be insurmountable. But anyway, the Americans are continuing with this diplomatic process, even though I get the sense that they're not united. According to the Financial Times and to CBS, Dan Driscoll, Trump's new peace envoy, the man who's taken over from Kellogg, has done that which Kellogg never did. He's actually spoken to the Russians. Now, he didn't go to Moscow, and I never thought he would, but he has instead met the Russians in the UAE, in Abu Dhabi, and presumably he is having discussions with the Russians there, both about the original 28-point plan and the new 19-point plan that the Ukrainians and the Europeans have got the Americans to agree to. It's not completely clear what all the full changes are. Supposedly, the territorial issue and the question of Ukraine's NATO membership are not yet resolved. There was an article by David Ignatius in the Washington Post saying that Rustem Umerov had told the Americans that given the situation, the Ukrainians would now be prepared to withdraw from Donbass. However, as I understand it, Umerov himself is denying that he had any input in the original 28-point plan, which makes that very specific provision. And I wonder whether that David Ignatius report can possibly be true. The Speaker of the Rada, the Ukrainian Parliament, Stefanchuk, who is a close ally of President Zelensky's, has said that there will be no concessions on territorial issues or on the question of Ukraine's right to join NATO. And overwhelmingly, I get the sense that this remains the position of the Zelensky government. So there's been reports that Zelensky is going to meet Trump. Apparently, there are some Ukrainian officials who are trying to talk him out of doing so. They know, of course, about the disastrous Oval Office meeting in February, which ended in a public row, a row which Zelensky, through his extraordinarily provocative behaviour, triggered. We also know that when Zelensky met with Trump a few weeks ago in Washington and brought his maps with him and rejected any suggestion of a Ukrainian withdrawal from the Donbass, we know that there was another row all over again. On that occasion, Zelensky won the point. Trump reverted to Zelensky's position of demanding an unconditional ceasefire on the existing conflict line. Since then, of course, Trump has again changed his mind. I've already discussed how it is the changes, the massive changes, or at least the visibly massive changes in the military situation that has undoubtedly caused him to do that. But you never know. If there is a meeting with Zelensky, he might change his stance again. He might go back to the full European, Ukrainian position. And of course, there is also the possibility of a public row blowing up too. Anyway, coming back to Driscoll, he's meeting with the Russians in Abu Dhabi. Now, we don't know which Russians. There's been no confirmation of this meeting from Moscow. We don't know which Russian officials are attending this meeting. And note that Peskov, as I pointed out earlier, was saying this morning that the Russians had not yet received the 28-point plan officially. They'd only received it unofficially. And they had not received... They had not obviously received the new 19-point plan. So, presumably, one of the purposes of Driscoll's meeting with the Russians in Abu Dhabi is to provide the Russians with at least copies of these plans, which clearly now exist in the plural. Now, that's the situation with the diplomacy in one respect. But of course, another Russian has been speaking, and that Russian is Ushakov, Putin's spokesman, Putin's foreign policy advisor. And he spoke to the media yesterday in response to an inquiry from TASS. And Ushakov spoke about the European counter-proposal, which, to say it, is not identical with the latest 19-point plan that apparently the Americans, the Ukrainians and the Europeans hammered out together. But apparently it does reflect many of the points that are contained in the European counter-proposal. And Ushakov said this: regarding the proposal circulating, this morning we learned of a European plan that at first glance appears entirely unconstructive and unsuitable for us. So Ushakov is saying that this plan, the Ukrainian-European plan, is completely rejected. It doesn't make provision for Ukraine's neutral status. It leaves the door open for Ukraine to join NATO. It rejects all territorial concessions. And that clearly is unacceptable. Ushakov had other things to say. He said that there are many other versions out there about the peace plan. Now, I'm speaking specifically about the version we have reviewed, and that's in connection with a comment he made that the Russians had seen it, but there'd be no specific negotiations about it. He said that I would say not all, but many provisions of this plan seem quite acceptable to us. So not all of the plan, not all of the original 28-point plan is acceptable. Some parts of it might be, but clearly it would require a lot of negotiation and discussion and improvement if the Russians would be prepared to work with it. And Peskov said that, you know, I would proceed from the fact that it would be probably natural to assume that the Americans would come in to meet us face to face and start a discussion. And of course, that is happening today. And he says that he also said that clearly lots of people are sticking their oar in, and it looks as if the plan is being changed all the time, depending on who it is that the Americans speak to. So where are we? Where are we in this situation? American opposition to the plan, to the peace proposals, to negotiations with the Russians is hardening. European opposition is as hard as ever. The Ukrainians, in my opinion, have not shifted ground at all. A discussion is taking place between the Americans and the Russians. there is various versions of the peace plan circulating, but Peskov and Ushakov both sound sceptical. Ushakov says that there are some points in the original 28-point plan that the Russians can accept, but not all of it, and that the European counter-proposals are completely unacceptable. And Peskov says, well, at the moment, we're not even sure that the plan we have, which we've only obtained through unofficial channels, that plan even really basically exists. To repeat again, what the Russians have been consistently saying since August is that they came to an understanding with Trump in Anchorage, and they are not prepared to give ground on that. They want this plan, this agreement, to be fulfilled, and any plan, if it is to go forward, must be based on what was agreed between the Russians and the Americans in Anchorage. The 28-point plan, I suspect, didn't do so. Of course, I don't know exactly what the Americans and the Russians agreed in Anchorage, but I suspect that this plan, the 28-point plan, probably does deviate from the Anchorage agreement significantly. What I have heard about the 19-point plan, which the Americans came back from Geneva with, and which is now being taken to Trump, and perhaps which is being shown to the Russians in Abu Dhabi, it seems to me that that plan has deviated from Anchorage even further. And the Russians are already saying, Ushakov has just said, that the European counter-proposal is completely unacceptable. So there we are. That's, it seems to me, the situation. The Americans are still trying, and it's not difficult to understand why. From Trump's point of view, the war is being lost. The one thing, in my opinion, that he prioritizes over everything else is the avoidance of a fall of Saigon or a fall of Kabul moment. He probably remembers that the two US presidents who were in office when those events took place, President Ford and President Biden, both lost office. In Biden's case, he never recovered, his popularity never recovered from the fall of Kabul. And of course, in the end, for all kinds of other reasons, but the Kabul issue, I suspect, was always there in the background. Well, that made it impossible. Eventually, it became impossible for him to stand. And as we know, he had to step down and withdraw his candidacy before the recent 2024 election. So Trump does not want to be another president who is in office whilst an allied capital falls. He knows what happened to previous presidents when that happened. He's terrified of that happening to him, and he's doing everything he possibly can to prevent it. He understands now that the Russians will never accept the Kellogg plan, the freezing of the conflict, or anything like it. And he's put out a proposal. He put out a proposal through Witkoff, which sought to move in a certain direction towards the Russians. He did that first in Anchorage, but now with much greater urgency with the 28-point plan. But he still balks at doing what is necessary to ram this agreement through. And I doubt myself that he can. I don't think he has the political strength to do it. And as I discussed in a program that I made recently, I wonder whether it was ever a good idea embarking on this exercise at all. It always seemed to me that any president, any US president who really did seek to negotiate peace in Ukraine would face insurmountable opposition, and it was unwise of Trump to try. Anyway, that's my totality. That's the total position as I understand it today. No doubt by tomorrow, after the Russians and the Americans have met and had their discussions in Abu Dhabi, we will learn more. It seems that the Ukrainians are not there, except, interestingly, that Dan Driscoll apparently wants to meet Kirill Budanov. And I wonder why, because Budanov is not a negotiator. Is he trying to get from Budanov a more accurate assessment of the military situation in Donbass and in Ukraine than he's getting from Sirsky, for example, and Gnatov in Kiev? Is that what that's all about? Or is it, again, part of some intrigue involving Budanov trying to destabilize the government in Kiev? Or is Budanov acting on Zelensky's behalf, being briefed by Driscoll after the meeting with the Russians on Zelensky's behalf? The last, I have to say, seems to me unlikely. I would have thought that there would be more reliable aides, people closer to Zelensky, who he would send to meet with Driscoll. But anyway, I think there's lots of room for speculation about this. I've floated some of the possibilities, and no doubt there are others. Now, I said that this is going to be a short programme, and I'm only going to deal with the military situation very quickly. Briefly, the big news yesterday was that there are now apparently strong reports that Russian troops have entered Guliapolye, and that there is now fighting taking place inside the town in Zaporozhye region. It's unclear how strongly this town is being defended. The Russians yesterday said that they had cut all the supply lines, all the supply roads to Guliapolye. Again, there are some questions about that, which I will discuss in a future programme. But the Russians said that they've cut off the supply lines to Guliapolye. If this is true, then it may be that the resistance in Guliapolye will not last very long. There's also been lots of news from Siversk, and I will briefly say here that my understanding of the situation is that the Russians are not only seeking to capture Siversk itself, but to destroy the brigade that is defending the town and as many other Ukrainian troops as possible. There was a long article about this whole situation in Radovka, and it made it fairly clear that what the Russians are trying to do is to create another cauldron to trap and destroy Ukrainian troops, not just in Siversk, but in the fields to the west of Siversk. To repeat, in other words, what the Russians have managed to do in Kupiansk and in Pokrovsk. Clearly, the objective remains, as much as always, the destruction of the Ukrainian army. Aggressive attrition, in other words, continues. Thirdly, there's been more news from Pokrovsk. The Russian Defense Ministry has confirmed that the Russians have cleared two of the most important micro-districts in Pokrovsk. One was the Shakhtarsky micro-district. We know all about that. We've known about that for some time. But the second is another micro-district to the north of the Shakhtarsky micro-district. My guess is that it was in this area that the major resistance from what was left of the Ukrainian garrison in Pokrovsk was concentrated. With the capture of these two micro-districts, I suspect that the Russians will now be free to clear the rest of Pokrovsk, and that this will happen fairly quickly now. Last night was also a night of drone and missile strikes. The Ukrainians conducted drone attacks on several Russian towns. The Russians say that the primary targets of the Ukrainian drones were residential buildings. Bear in mind, I'm not there, so I can't say, but I will discuss all of that more fully tomorrow. And Clearly, there have been Russian drone and missile strikes. A big Russian drone and missile strike against Ukraine as well, which has also taken place over the last few hours. So a lot is going on the battle fronts, but the key thing is that the battle of Donbass continues and the battle of Zaporozhye continues, and the Russians are winning both. In fact, in Zaporozhye region, the pace of the Russian advance remains remarkably fast. Anyway, this is where I'm going to finish today's video. Shorter than usual. I hope the sound this time was good. But as I said, I have a train to catch. Let me remind you again that you can find all our programs on our various platforms, Locals, Rumble and X, and also, of course, our new Substack site. And also, please remember, if you want to support this support us, that you can do so via Patreon and Subscribestar, and by going to our shop, links under this video. Last but not least, if in spite of its shortness you've liked this video, please remember to tick the like button and to check your subscription to this channel. That's me for today. More from me soon. Have a very good day.